All right, I want to open by talking about what a poet is to me, what poetry is to me, and what I feel Vincent would be in chorus with. I don't believe that a poet is separate from life. I don't believe a poet is separate from the common. I don't believe the poet is separate from every day. And I feel that Vincent wanted us all to be aware that we are poetry. That poetry, like Lau Tremont said, must be made by all, not by one. Poetry is not something for the academy. For poetry, like Pound said, once it's divorced from song, is dead, and once song is cut off from poetry, it's dead. So Vincent would have always said a lot in his autobiography and in his what Henry has recorded of him and what we have in all of these books is that you are the poem. My life is the poem. So I think that I'm not really turned on by this idea of talent. Remember, oh, that person has talent. This is a really bad way for us to grow up and live our lives to think like, oh, well, you know, I'm not a talented person. There's a talent in life. And to cordon things off like painting and cooking and violin and dance and to say, well, these are the talented and I can't participate is ridiculous. And I think the poet, like, will remind you that you have dreams just as real as me, and I have dreams just as real as you, and Vincent had dreams just like you do, and he goes to sleep just like you do. Now, Vincent may be open a little bit more to that, to the gust of wind. He may pay more attention to the minute particulars that Blake said we have to pay attention to, the minute particulars. Of my, like, look closely into someone, look closely into the street, and the routine, of course, of daily life is the anti-poetic. It's like what will rob you of your own poetry is our daily routine, where we gloss over the whole world, like when a child says, a child sitting with their parent, and they see a bird, and the child's like that, you know, really turned on by the vision of the bird. And the parent goes, oh, honey, it's a bird. Well, that's not the job of the poet. It's not just anything. It is itself. It is real. It is complex. And it is beautiful if we could only pay attention to it. So I really wanted to start off by saying, because what we have today is Henry picked out something. He knows a bit of a backstory about why Vincent wanted this to be put together, and it came out, I think the publication date's 2007, maybe 2004. So it's very late, and we know from Dorothy that
apropos to that was, I have the world and all its creatures. Dear to me are the intimacies of their features.
See? So I just wanted to start off by saying that this isn't something that's like in the past. Like, I'm not into like looking at Vincent or anyone who has that turns you on artistically. I'm not interested in looking at them as something that's past. They're present. Maybe that's why they wrote a whole lot. Maybe that's why they kind of knew, like, hey, I'm leaving my trace. I'm leaving my trace behind. You know, like when a tree lets off its seeds. That's all I think that these books are from Vincent, are seeds that of his own tree that he left off that are scattered. Now, it may take five winter cycles for that to pop back up and to break, but they're there. And I just wanted to, a big feeling I had today was to remind us all that we are poets, that poetry has to be made by everybody. And I'm not talking about poets in like this rock star sense. I'm not talking about it in a divorce sense. Poets go to the bathroom, poets have dreams, poets have heartbreaks. And if their poetry is going to come off properly, it will attend to those real things that we all experience. And any time you feel, oh, this is so beautiful, if you feel the emotional tingling in the back of your neck or in your soul when you read a poet, that's because you are as real as them. So that's basically what I wanted to open with tonight by saying, it's like, let's forget this Picasso bullshit. Let's forget this. Let's remember that they were little babies too. And their mom had to clean them up too. So that's what I wanted to say. We have a good book here that has a whole lot from Vincent's work, his whole work, the whole song. And maybe if you guys want to say anything about what you've been feeling about meeting up with this, or if you want to read anything at all from any book, an idea you had, that's the idea I had, that I think Vincent would have put his arm around Lautremont and said, yes, poetry must be made by all, not by one. So, if we're going to live in paradise, why not? So, I have some poems in here that I like too. But for example, this one just made me.
Maybe someone else gave the one, so like read one first before you jump in.
Yeah, of course. Poetry must be made by all, not by one.
I could read folk song if I could find it.
Oh, yeah.
But I think I know it by heart.
I'm curious about when you were doing all of Vincent's poems, when you were going through all that stuff, what your process was. You came across stuff that you liked, obviously, and you glommed onto it and you turned it into something else, but
I just looked at the lines, and if they hit me, if I liked them right away and I didn't have to understand them or anything, or I thought I could do something with them, or I could make them live any way different, I just picked them. It's pretty random. I was just, and I'd see a line and say, oh yeah, that's a good one. Because, you know, when I did some of those things were only one line. So I had to change them up a little bit.
To everybody who doesn't know.
I had to get over how sacred some people think stuff is. I know if somebody's going to do one of my songs, I want them to do it right.
He loved it. He loved what you did.
And like with Garrett, he gave me carte blanche. He said, you can do whatever you want. And he said, in the old days, the poets and the musicians, they used to work together, and they would change things all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so I felt I had the okay, but I also had to work my way up the Farini ladder. And I was picking all the stuff that wasn't as famous as like the Gold and the Life is a Poem and stuff like that. I had to record about 8 things before I did some of his classic ones. I had to earn the privilege, I thought. But, you know, he was like, he was over my shoulder for the whole time. He said, well, Vincent, I got to repeat this line a few times, or I might have to take a word out here or there because it's going to be played at Virgilio's, you know, and it's a family place.
Page 30.
Yeah,
Willie did a record. It's on Spotify, but also maybe he can give you.
That's amazing. It's on Spotify.
It's on Spotify. So, but also, I, you know, it's if you could
Vincent
come over
Farini's
my house.
Vincent Farini's greatest hit. And Fred Buck said, use your real name, Willie, for this one. So by William Spence Alexander. I mean, it's like, what's he going to be on the next record? Is it Willie Loco? Is it Willie Alexander? William Spence Alexander. Holy crap.
So Willie, when you did these songs, put music to Vincent's words, did you mix some of the poems together, or was it always one poem?
It was always,
sometimes you
always
tweak it a little.
Sometimes I'd tweak them a little bit.
Okay.
But mostly I'd repeat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was what I would do. What number was that?
Page 30.
But this, wasn't this one of the poems that Olson supposedly looked up Farini because he liked this one?
Folk song?
Yeah, wasn't yeah. This is the one?
I think that's the one.
Okay, well,
Pass by Day. By
yeah, this is folk song. So what I did with this one, I had like three chords, and I just kept repeating it. It goes about four times. I might have repeated one line or something, but most of his stuff was, they were like one line, and it was a great line, but it's like I didn't want they became sort of like songs, but it wasn't like they had this hardcore movement in rock and roll where guys were doing like whole litanies in like a half a second, you know. It was like boom, 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 it was over. I didn't want to make them that fast, so I slowed some of them down and just repeated them a lot. So this is folk song. I pass by.
Come on, sing it.
I pass by day and night. No one has seen me. Reading it like this is hard for me. It's like
I pass by
day and night. No one has seen me. If you ever want to find me and know me, leave behind yourself and enter the caves of other people. There you will find me, who is yourself. And I just repeated it. It was just like, you know, after repeating something a few times, you sort of understand it, or you think you do, or it feels like you do, and that's a good thing. I mean, I even worked with some of the Olson stuff, and it's like, scratching my head over that stuff for decades.
Well, that's
this was more direct.
That's the thing about reading poetry. Anyhow, you read it the first time, you sort of get like a sense of it. You read it the second time, you get another sense of it. You read it the third time, you may even get some other like flashes. And fourth time, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like it's very multifaceted there. The facets that you see, I think.
Yeah. Mm. So that was a big one. I don't know. I did a few shows where I would just do his stuff. I don't know if I can remember how I did them. I know you started me off in this, Henry, when we did that memorial service, and I picked two or three things, and they didn't end up like they ended up. You know, I changed.
The memorial service is also filmed. It's also on film.
Really? It's online?
Was it?
Is it?
The Verini one?
I saw it somewhere.
Huh.
Willie's like recorded that a bunch of times. Huh? Yeah, that could be there. Did you sing it at the
this
at
one?
City
no,
Hall?
No. No.
Did you Google
I forget.
It
I forget what I did.
So do you find that these songs that you're doing are constantly morphing, constantly transforming?
Yeah, it's hard to do the same thing the same way twice. Usually because I don't remember the chords correctly, or I goof up the words.
Do you also sometimes understand it differently the more you read it?
Yeah. Sometimes it feels different. It depends on, how I'm feeling too.
Mm-hmm. This is all about communication too. I mean, I feel
that was his big thing. Mm,
yeah, it's we can't communicate if you don't leave yourself behind.
Yeah.
Mm. It's a dialogue.
This is him identifying with everybody too.
Right.
How they can identify with
it
him.
Is.
That's
he
a big
himself.
One.
Yep.
It's not like he's on a pedestal or anything.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Whitman. Mm.
So that was a good. I forget which one I did first. It was the that 3-4 thing.
Thanks for doing that. Mm. It's great to hear you read that.
The rhythm you do is so cool.
Yeah, actually, I had to take
like
all of his stuff and rewrite it.
Huh.
You know, with my own breaks and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I was tripping over it, because this was his way.
Yeah.
I already changed it, Vincent. You know?
That's fine.
But it was fine with him,
Yeah. That's so good.
Well, if the living is the poetry, then it's all
Why not?
Up for grabs.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what? This is actually in the poesis. This is what Lautremont says. plagiarism is necessary. Because you got to begin new every single day. You can't go. You
tell
can't.
Tell me about this Lontremont dude. I don't know him.
So he was born in Uruguay in 1847.
Yeah.
And he ends up in Paris right at the time of the Commune. And he writes this mad book, and it's called The Chants of Maldoror. And it is the most evil book imaginable.
Isn't it about the ocean and stuff too?
Oh yeah. It's about the ocean. It's about the cows. It's about the jardinians. It's about the dogs. It's about the... check it out. But what it, to me, does... do you guys know of Hannah Arendt's book, Eichmann in Jerusalem? Yeah. And we see in Eichmann in Jerusalem that the Nazis were obsessed with legality. It's kind of funny that they were being obsessed with this, these heinous acts, but if it's legal, then we're all right. So with Lautremont, he writes this book at 24, and it is evil. It is an evil book, and it's very scary and very violent and horrifying. But he doesn't once seek justification for his acts or any legal standing whatsoever for his acts in this book. And you guys have to read it. It's like a 250-page book. Now, he does an interesting trick, because this Maldoror character is a villain, and he goes around and he's beating everybody up, and it's really like I've never read something so intense before. I had to take multiple showers after just reading it. Then he writes his poesis, which is like an angel. An angel wrote the poesis, but Maldoror, it's like the devil wrote it, right? But in the poesis, this is where I'm quoting from. Poetry must be made by all, not by one, and that plagiarism is necessary for development. To plagiarize is a necessary development. So, for example, I read Vincent's work first, came up here, discovered this place, discover Willie, and he puts his CD in my pocket. Now Vincent's work becomes completely new to me, because now I have this CD that I listen to every day. And it's like now, cacarone, cacarone. I have to call now Henry and say, Henry, what's Americone baloney? He says it's fucking it's baloney, man. It's spam. That's what Vincent was getting at. Well, what's it from, you know? Well, he had this crazy book that some of you guys have, and I wish we had every Vincent book in the Sawyer Free Library or something, because it's a shame. But in his No Fish book that's represented in here, and maybe Henry could do it, he speaks in the Creole, I guess, the Italian Creole. Here we are. Hold on. I want to show you. Let's go over it. Maybe some. Okay, Boulevard of Decut. Ballad of Decut. This is on page 74. And anybody who doesn't have the book should see. Just pass it around after. Henry, or does anybody feel comfortable with this? I'll give it a go, and then we'll plagiarize and develop it, okay? Ballad of Decut. Some never get over Decut. What a butt. Because of it, we relish wit and breath when the foreigners depart. Then back to her, udders ain't gonna leave this cloth and weave all on account of this cut, that hates a rut, a professor of heights, of highs, midnight baseball and seashell tights, the farmer, the toolmaker, and the sleek craft, angle here and draw the straight and the draft, this runnel of desire, absorbing that last throes of the empire, that hip and that bearded conqueror, the secret streets camp and zonker, this wounded forum of our novus ordo secorolum
rum. So that's Latin. Does anybody would know
that? Yeah, I mean, somebody give it out. I mean, Dorothy, maybe you could do it better.
New World Order.
Or Paul, maybe. Okay.
A lot of those had to do with this Italian vernacular, which he grew up with his parents speaking and so forth. So he emulated that in the songs. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
And the whole book's written this way. It's really neat.
Didn't they jump all over him for that one?
I think a lot of the critics did.
Yeah.
What did you ask, Willie?
They put him down for that.
Not today, though. Times
maybe.
Probably even more so today.
Yeah, more so.
Really?
Be extremely politically incorrect too.
Yeah, right.
Although he was Italian, so you should be able to get away with it.
You're saying it's politically incorrect to use a vernacular?
Well, to sort of create his own version of a vernacular in which he is impersonating the speech of Gloucester Italians, even though he's.
But no different than Sterling Brown, you know, and his characters, you know, with African American characters in the turn of the century.
Yeah,
that's what I think. I mean, I never talked to Vincent about Sterling Brown, but
did Sterling Brown write?
Well, he had all these characters. What were they called? Like Slim, like, you know, Crazy Slim, or these. He would put words into these personages that some people may have thought to be very stereotypical, but they were really speaking. They were speaking the truth.
Were you going to say nicknames? Was that one of the things you were about to say? You said Nick, let me stop.
No.
Okay. Are we supposed to take the words to mean things like? This runnel of desire absorbing the last throes of the empire.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
The last throes of the empire. I don't think we.
I know.
We're getting there.
Yeah, I really would. Can't wait to see it crumble. but one thing I do know about. For example, even Charles Olson got a bunch of flack for being vulgar. And I think this would be considered vulgar, even though he's not saying anything nasty. That there is this is why I opened with this thing about we all are poets. I don't mean it in that, like, I'm trying to wrestle away from this notion of a poet as, like, atomized away from the world, but this is necessary, I believe, because there is this snobism, you know, of it. And in the 30s, Olson was getting flack from this guy he was very beholden to, Edward Dahlberg, for being vulgar. And I go back and look at the poem, and he's not talking about anything disgusting at all. He's speaking like Gloucester people speak, and that's what this guy Dahlberg throws him out for being vulgar. Dahlberg's first novel, The Bottom Dogs, is about street people, and it's about this really intense relationship he has with his mother growing up in poverty. And he looks back on it in the introduction that I have and says, I'm ashamed of this because I wrote in that language. I think that we should really be aware and like weary of being a snob. This is dangerous. Snobbish behavior is what how you can start to isolate out different parts of our human family and say, well, it's okay for them. I mean, I had one time I remember, God, this was so long ago, a woman looked at me, she said, I mean, these two professors were arrested. These people have families, these people have jobs, and the police arrested them. Well, I mean, to me, that's vulgar, because it says, no, there are people who should be arrested, and there's obviously people who shouldn't be arrested. Of course, she wasn't saying that to me, but no, someone who wears a tweed jacket shouldn't be arrested. Oh, yikes.
That's why I have a tweed jacket.
Yeah, yeah. So if you want to get away, maybe the tweed will help you out.
Well, there's that thing that Martin sent around, that transcription he did.
I
read it. You know that transcription of the interview that Martin Ray sent around? There's some line in there about Vincent's talking about how I can go down and talk to the fishermen because they don't think of me as, I don't think of myself as a poet. You know, I just think of myself as a guy who walks around town. I mean, that's kind of it. You know, it's like, if you have to put on your tweed jacket or whatever, I don't know, and say, once you say, I'm a poet, you're fucked, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I mean, you might as well just give it up at that point.
Because I was in the Chinese restaurant the other day, wasn't it? A couple of weeks ago, Midori's, you get a buffet, both of you. So it was not very crowded, but these lobster guys came in. I love to listen to them. It's like being on the subway, He's complaining, and he's talking about how low the price is, and I still want to see La Terra Firma. I want to do that film. So I was asking him if there's a middleman, because he goes to one place, they all do, or maybe the co-op, I think, in Rockwood or something. Oh, Joe, the one who does Good Morning Lobster? He's a big wheeler dealer.
He's a wheeler dealer.
That's what I learned that time. So
real estate man.
So do you think you guys would like to come? Because I was talking about it, I said at a meeting the other day, would you like to come and see this Italian film? It's called La Terra Ferma, and it's all about one guy in Italy, and it was in the 50s, and it doesn't end very happily, but I think that you could bring the whole crew, all the fishermen. He says, yeah, you get it going. I said, where are you? So then he tells me he's down at Joe's. I didn't know he was into the business. I mean, here's where politics comes in with me. He's doing the news program. So anyway, what did he say finally? He says, I don't even eat that shit. It's the cockroach of the sea. I never heard someone call it the cockroach of the sea. Have you heard it called
bugs? They call them bugs.
I used to work in a lobster. The roaches. They crawl backwards.
In the old days, they used to think it was, the worst thing.
Scavenger.
The Jews thought so. Send them to the help of when they bottom because they eat a lot of garbage, but they probably.
If you see what they eat, you wouldn't want to eat one.
Saw how burgers or like hot dogs were made, you wouldn't want to eat them either. Have you been to a hot dog frown?
What you have to put on your garden. I don't go near a lot of hot dogs either. You wouldn't want to eat that.
And when you're working on a lobster boat, you fill up these bait bags and then you pull the traps up and you see all this gross looking bait and you just think that's what these lobsters are eating. I'm not gonna eat that. Plus I was vomiting over the side of the boat most of the time they were eating.
They don't
too,
have
so.
An easy death either.
Oh, what?
They don't die easily.
No.
The lobsters?
Oh, no.
You can mesmerize them before you kill them if you want. You rub them right in between their eyes.
You're still going to eat them. So.
Well, let's dig this. Like let's dig this poem. Let's check out The Bulldozers Get the Fisherman's Institute. This is on page 66.
There's some great pictures of the Fisherman's Institute that Arnie Jarmak took when they were tearing it down that are...
Is that where the police station is now?
That's where the police station is.
Thank you, Willie.
They came in the middle of the night and tore it down because no one would let them tear it down.
What was it?
And there were all these beautiful old paintings inside and they all disappeared.
There was a huge uproar in town when they were... And Vincent has this great line where he talks about why he said that you can't tear this place down because of its name. It's called the Fisherman's Institute. That's all he said.
And so. This. The bulldozers get the Fisherman's Institute. By their votes, they've made themselves an unholy six of the stick and a megalith of parking lots, a fix they'll never squirm out of. These shamblers of history, the terror downers, terrorists in reverse, or tax dollar oraclers. These are the rug pullers, the terrados in the city pilings, the barnacles the vessels are heir to, by citizen default, the cause of fishes fleeing. Vincent Farini. Yeah.
Cause of fishes fleeing.
Yeah. All right, I'll give it a go again. Let's try it. Will somebody read it? Will somebody else read it?
You read it. Beautiful.
Okay. So, I really think it's so, like, you, Elizabeth, when you said you were listening to the fisherman talk, this is, like, totally, like, the attention to the minute particulars. I mean, listen to the world around you. This is amazing because Vincent's our witness. He's a witness to this. And, this is what I was thinking about in the shower today that I wanted to say before here. Whitman said in the end of his introduction that the great poet will be remembered by the following generations will remember this person. They will be with this person. So Dorothy remembers Vincent. I mean, I'm with Vincent nightly. I mean, I remember him. The people who did this and tore this down, the names of these people, who the fuck are they? Who are these people? I mean, and I wanted to make this point that you know who's gonna survive and who's gonna last? Those people who are true. You know why? And I hate to ever talk about this, but I haven't brought up this guy's name. He won the presidential election. Who's our president? Donald Trump. Okay. Look, you know why everybody fucking talks about this guy all the time? It's because he's not worth it. That's why the media pumps it. That's why the Globe he's on the front cover. That's why everybody's going to talk. And when you turn on, if you go into any, I don't have a TV, but anytime I'm in public, it's all in my face about this guy, right? What I'm trying to say is the people who are true don't need that. They don't need to be pumped. And believe me, this that we're doing tonight, I'm not doing it to promote Vincent Farini. I'm doing it because I love him and I would have done it alone by myself. And I'm going to do it when this class ends. It's not going to end. I'm going to live with these poems. And I'm going to, I mean, I sing Willie's songs on Middle Street in the middle of my mind. I sing that because I want to sing and I want to dance. And I sing Vincent all the time. But the thing I'm trying to point out is I'm very suspicious when a name has to always be in my face. Why is that? That all the time you have to hear about these cowards, you always have to hear about them. I mean, constantly. I mean, and I'm not even subscribed to the NYT or any of this stuff, but I see it. I'm saturated by media. It's all around me. The reason why is because cowards, people who lie, are forgotten. They don't mean anything. They don't. That's why what I'm trying to say is that with this Fisherman's Institute, who are these six with their stick?
City councilors. Whoever they were.
Yeah. They're, yeah. And okay, this is what I'm trying to get at. Now, Vincent Farini well, is this is why we said, I put in the poster, like to quote William Blake, the authors are in eternity. The city council members are not in eternity. The ones that Vincent champions, which he does at certain points, there are some. There's a beautiful poem where he said, there was one guy, and I'll look for it. There was one guy who stood up tonight out of the whole lot of them that actually mattered. And one more thing. Shelley's poem, Osmandius. Do we anybody know this poem? I've met a traveler in a distant land. Mm-hmm. He told me this about the sand. Shelley was very important to Vincent. And for me, one of the main hinges of Shelley's Osmandius poem is that these greats, these people that they have to make statues for, actually are, that exposes how they don't stand on anything. And guess what? The sands of time will cover their statue.
But Percy's wife committed suicide because he ran off with Lieutenant Mary.
I would suggest reading The Quest. Yes, we should read the critical biographies of Shelley. Please. Because Harriet loved Shelley. They were in love. And it's... Yeah, I know.
It's okay.
That happens, you know, people's hearts break and it hurts to be in love. But I think the best biography that I know is The Quest. So, but it's a very critical biography of Shelley, and it gets into the Harriet business. But
I like your idea about bringing up eternity, like that. And this is not maybe that connected, but I liked the film on Van Gogh, and the title was The Edge of Eternity. Yeah. And
was that around recently?
It was, yeah, it was wonderful. And he knew that's when, you know, that's where his... He painted the end of his life with a tremendous passion because he knew it would be for eternity.
Were there a lot of quotes from his letters to his brother that they did with Theos? I gotta go see that. I miss that.
So, and it's really... important to have that kind of understanding.
Yeah, I think Vincent. I think Whitman was spot on. He was saying that if you come true, and if you're honest, what will happen is this is why I'm not really concerned about making sure that people understand how important Vincent Farini is. It's nobody did that for me. Somehow, in this way, this world, this mysterious life turns out, I found out about the guy. And I live with him now. And it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like shown to me, and I don't know how it happened, but I think one of the clues to that mystery is what Walt Whitman said, that the people that come after these honest people, these beautiful people, these incredible dancers, they'll be their favorite. The kids will love them. You know, the preceding generation will love it. Yeah.
I wish Amiel was here.
Yeah.
And hopefully he'll hear some of this tonight. Amiel Alcala.
Oh, man, yeah.
But we had a brief conversation after one of the sessions, and he said something like, why didn't Vincent ever catch on? You know, and because we were so into these early poems, right? And the first two sets, the recognizing what a great writer he was, you know, and so in touch with the times, and didn't have an answer, you know, and I shouldn't have spent so much time on the introduction, but that's what I did in preparation for tonight. And because I started to think maybe this would be a reason, because of, I really was disappointed in the introduction, and it's...
Who wrote it?
It was written... You don't want me to go into this now.
Really?
Yeah,
oh,
I do.
I'll be interested.
It was written by two people.
It was written by two people, and Fred Whitehead and Ken Warren. And I think the first big mistake was
Before that, Dorothy, you know that before those two guys did it, He had Sean McNiff write one.
What's wrong with that?
They got into a tiff.
Maybe they should have used both.
Well,
as,
Dorothy, what do you, what did you think?
From the others,
well,
I want the criticism.
The criticism. The criticism. The big criticism is they tried to make it as if they were both, two people or one, writing this introduction. I found myself, okay, this was written by Fred Whitehead, and this was written by Ken Warren, because they are in two very different planes.
They are.
And Fred Whitehead is a beautiful writer about Vincent's
political life.
And he put out a newsletter called And One Popular Culture from Kansas, and had some terrific issues, front page stories on Vincent, and just got them, you know. And also Ken Warren had a newsletter. But I just got this couple pages, I'm just so angry, and there's so many wrong things in here, so much I disagree with. And
were they friends of his? Is that why they were chosen?
Well, Fred, well, see, I'm not, wherever I see Fred Whitehead, I think he's right on. He's, but when it goes off into the archetypes and Jungian thought, I really feel that Ken Warren is projecting everything that he dedicated his life to as an independent scholar, and just sort of tried to fit some of Vincent's stuff into that. And now Vincent was very respectful of professionals. You know, he wasn't an academic, and he respected people that studied and wrote, and it's the same with, you know, why he respected Olson, even though Olson, that's pretty lousy what's in letter five, but you know, they were close, and he could, you know, it wasn't helpful to Vincent that he had to put up with some of that arrogance, but...
Well, he's academic sometimes. Like he says, Styx, that's the river Styx. That's from Greek mythology.
He is deeply...
You know, he knew it all.
He knew everything. I mean, he taught himself. He taught himself. He wasn't...
Right.
It wasn't part of, like,
doesn't
what everybody
it,
else was saying.
And you have to, too, get that... You're not... When you go to school, you're not supposed to read in school. That's not why the people go to school.
He went to the library.
You go to the library to read.
Right, right.
You read on your own. When you're in school, that's not what... School isn't about sitting up all night with a book.
So let me just say, I tried to boil it down. I have to give it a lot. I don't even like that expression, boil anything down.
Yeah.
But what I saw going on was a difference between fate, okay, which... is a deeply religious thing, you know, as far as being fated, that you're fated, or that there's reincarnation.
Like Buddha, karma.
No, I don't know. This is what, but where Kenneth Warren is, the idea of fate and the idea of the fact that humankind can act. So, you know, this is basically the heart of Marxism, is that man... And that humankind can act, and that's what Farini took to heart, I think, with his talks in the city council and that kind of thing, and his work, his life's work.
Yeah.
But to pigeonhole him into this Jungian thing, and
is that what you think he's doing? You see
and it.
And Vincent was big into that. I mean,
well, maybe
he was
into the collective consciousness.
Jung
is just collective consciousness. That's the two words I use for him, and that's all.
It's interesting on page 15, 16, 17. I have something critical about the fact that there's very little knowledge here of the suffering of black people under Jim Crow. I mean, in the times that they're talking about.
So Dorothy, can you bring me up and say, is he saying that Vincent didn't get that?
About
because I find that I really how much Vincent is right on with black people. I mean, I'm really that's why I like the man's work, because he's early on writing about how a common he sees the oppression across the world.
Right, oppression and exploitation. I'm not ready to give a full presentation of this. I just, because I reread it for the first time, and I was, you know, having been in this group and just getting into Vincent again, and I don't think this introduction does Vincent a service.
I understand what you're saying, Dorothy. I mean, it's really, the introduction is schizoid. You know, Vincent wanted Whitehead was not able to deal with Vincent's later work, and the other guy, Ken Warren, wasn't able to deal with Vincent's earlier work. So when Sean McNiff backed out, they had this. He decided that that's where how it was going to go, because he felt that he needed, you know, the Lynn side of his life represented it by labor and Whitehead, with his, you know, movement to Gloucester into the social cosmic.
Yeah. And Vincent would have said, and he always says, we can't separate ourselves. He talks about this, that we're a schizoid society.
Yeah, heart split from head.
So this is absurd to talk about how what happened in Lynn is disconnected from what happened later on.
Like, yeah, but he wasn't able to find someone to blend that in his introduction. I think that's what Dorothy's picking up on.
Yeah.
And not only show the continuity, but not disparage his mythic union stuff, or whatever he says about, you know, as if he moved away from that when that was such a powerful. I felt it going back over those early poems, and, you know, it was the same man, the same passion and compassion, and that he took to everything he did, and you know, not separating people in the world and all that.
Well, I have a response poem by Vincent about all of this, because I think Vincent gives us the answers, because you know what? Vincent didn't have any trouble with it. He was a whole thing. He was a unified person.
The big question. A shopkeeper asked me, a bartender and a lumper, who are you? And I said, the community of self. And they said, ah, yes, never thought of it. And a banker eavesdropping made a note of it in his ledger.
Okay. So what was the book that this is from?
Community of self, probably.
It was from No Fish, right?
That
community of self
is part of that.
It's part of No Fish. Yeah. So it was written post-union.
Oh, yeah.
And here it is.
It should be in front of the Lewis Temple.
There's no difference. Mm-hmm. This is the community itself. I mean, and that unionism would show the way for that, because we wouldn't have democracy without the unions.
You
want to
get it?
We have democracy?
You got it.
You know, break the unions. We wouldn't have a middle class without unions.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
How about that?
That's a great, this is beautiful.
So, I brought up Marcuse in one of the classes, and of his work, The One-Dimensional Man.
Right.
We're not one-dimensional. We came from two people who came from four people.
We came from thousands.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, dig it. Figure it out. See, I mean, it's like, there was something I was reading where I'm reading a book on angels, and then I'm reading a book on, it's called What's the Use of Walking If There's a Freight Train Going That Way? And it's like hobo songs. I mean, what am I going to do? Like, freak out that I'm interested in angelology and then blues music?
So Vincent was interested in everything.
You got it. I'm not...
Right?
Excuse me.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say is, it's okay to acknowledge the different aspects of your personality. It's the community of self. And I love one thing. I think Vince is so good. I really see him in like an imagist way. I mean, he's this just short little poem. Mm-hmm. I can see the banker.
Yeah.
With this ledger.
Of course, the banker's a human being.
Right. All go down to the bank.
Right.
Stealing the shit.
Pound with a ladder.
All right, let's try this one. It's called The Winter of Ideologies.
Where is that?
That's on page 110. And if anybody wants to give it a read, I would love to hear, listen.
The Winter of Ideologies. As a long line of time, the one-wheel bicycle of whose name is God's seeing eye dog for the blind man. A century's will rolling off the leader and the lead a seance. Space clowns around a conference table mix realities, throwing them to the winds and waiting with questions and answers. Jefferson and Marx debate between them, and Hitler's what is on the wheel reaping itself. The earth's rememberings, the hauntings and flip sayings and marriages of death's evens, but the odds and stars are happy life is banking her insights. The cosmos is Magdalene's eye, fulfilling beings becoming, and everything else on loan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'd rather have to read that 2-3 times.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I take is from it, especially as the last line, is, well, like you were saying, from Marcuse, it's not one-dimensional, but the beings becoming, constant becoming, so you can't
make
something
set.
This is it.
Process.
I'm thinking of Garrett's making the place by pacing the place. You know, like just for some reason, the curving of the earth and the turning of the earth. Have you ever seen these photos, these Milky Way photos? There's these people, they're called like Milky Way chasers, and they go out to Halbert Point State Reserve and they take these pictures, and I'm a framer, so I see a lot of these photos. And they set their camera up for like 2 hours.
Yeah, it's a time exposure.
And the things, it's a whirl. The image of that I frame is completely freaked out. It's like, as if God turned
the stars
like atop. And I said, what the hell, did you do that over, how long were you out there? Oh, 2 hours. 2 hours and the thing spins like a top? I mean, that's crazy. But that's how fast we're moving.
It's us.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
We're spinning. Mm.
That's interesting. Was this poem, did it have the word ideologies in it?
The Winter of Ideologies, yeah.
Ideologies, because I wish I could find the section where, I think in the introduction he mentions Rudolf Steiner.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And,
the Steiner mystique.
Didn't you send us something to school?
But in general, but in addition, I have some questions about the occult. And, this I mean when Warren writes, he writes with such authority. And it is partially because I don't mean that I buy it, but it sounds like he's got the word, you know, and Roman numeral 25. It is crucial to note that Ferrini's relationship with Christ, I know immediately this is not Fred Whitehead's writing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right, right.
Is not so much based on the working class Roman Catholicism he shares with Olson, but rather on Christian gnosis described by Arthur Vassilius in Gnosis and Literature as direct experiential insight into the divine. I keep asking, according to who? And the archetype of Christ is perhaps more than any objections to literary form and practice, a determining factor behind Olson's difficulty with Ferrini. Olson, who was steeped in both the terrestrial plane and the symbol set of the tarot, could easily discern that Ferrini's nature could drift into ethereal domains where facts and forms are easily divested. Here we're talking about Ferrini noticing all the details of life, making recording in written language, everything that he's experiencing. Ferrini's psyche, activated by its voluntary reception of the living word of Christ in the Lynn Public Library? That doesn't come up in Henry's film.
Sure it does.
It does? Of Christ?
Yeah, it's that great, well, not Christ, but the angel.
Oh, the angel.
The angel pointing away. And then, you know, there's that, his self-portrait of Jesus Christ. That Vincent did. And Christ was a big figure in Vincent's life in terms of a political figure.
Then here he mentions Steiner. In the Lynn Public Library during the hard times of the Depression was thus a major stumbling block for Olson, who chastised him in Letter 5 for the Steiner mystique. Olson's reference to the occultist Rudolf Steiner arraigns Ferrini, who had published a poem in the Anthroposophical Journal, Proteus Quarterly. So they're pitting Olson. This is a pitting of Olson against Ferrini for just a portion of the 600 pages that Olson wrote or whatever. But
yeah, and also, right. I mean, this is, I have to say, from being in this library, this is a hugely religious library. And a vastly spiritual library. The texts we have here go all over world religion.
Right.
And William James's The Varieties of Religious Experience was a crucial text here.
How could you ignore it? You can't ignore that. Right.
Also, I want to say, too, there's that thing when Olson says, I'm a religious person. And by religion, I mean the people living together. Mm-hmm.
Religion means rebinding.
Rebinding.
That's what, you know, that's the root of it.
I think...
Not all the other hooey bullshit.
Exactly.
What did you say, not a what bullshit?
Not all the hooey bullshit that they throw at you from the, you know, the Bible and the
church. You mean in church or
whatever? We're all fed lies, you know, like Magdalena was a prostitute in the 50s.
And Jesus... And on Willie's record, what does Vincent say? I'm a friend of J.C.
Yeah, that's
I'm
true.
I'm a friend of Magdalene.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's from The Root. That's from John Carden. Willie was able to, like, rebirth that. That's like, have you ever heard that?
No.
So, we should, I gotta digitize that somewhere. I
trunk?
Brought that.
I'm just trying to say
about
that.
The trunk, yeah.
Oh, The Root, yeah. The
I'm just trying to say that, for me, Vincent has allowed me to see Jesus Christ in a new way. Mm-hmm. And so the same with Charles Olson, mm-hmm. has allowed me to look at religion in a completely different way than I ever looked at it, because he said, these people are, are unorthodox. I never in my whole life had somebody, and this is the benefit I feel like of a benefit of Vincent and Olson and poets. I never had somebody say to me, religion is what people do together.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's like, so I know it sounds so simple, but it's very liberating for me to hear that.
Yeah.
hear a new take on something that I kind of was like, oh boy, religion, like, what is, I don't want to even get into that. Maybe I'll talk about spirituality, but I think Olson says, hey, you can check it out in a different way. You can check out Vincent, I mean, you could check out JC in a different way, where he's whipping the money changers out of the church. Like, that's our toe, you know, that's the theater,
right.
A theater as a political act.
Right.
And, you know, there's also, like, we have all these crazy books in here, like Fragments of the Forgotten Faith, of all about this really far out Christian mysticism, that it took me to, like, relate to somebody like Vincent to say, hey, okay, I can check this out and be comfortable with it, and not looking, not having over my eye some priest or something, some beady-eyed priest or something like that. And I don't know about, Dorothy, I'm sensitive when it comes to the pitting Charles Olson and Vincent together. In the last class, I read a lot of I read a lot of late work about how affectionate Vincent was towards Charles.
Oh, he loved him, yeah.
And
did you think that I?
No, not at all. I'm just agreeing with what you're saying down there at the bottom. How you said it, like, out of the 600 pages of Olson,
just that letter.
It's convenient to, if you want to look at it in that way, to put people opposed to each other if you're trying to advance a point. But I think that poets, I believe the poets are mystical, and I don't mean it in an airy fairy way. They are mystical. They have sensed the energy of life.
Vincent was a serious mystic.
Thank you.
Like, what
would you say?
Vincent was a serious mystic. The Gnostic stuff, which I don't understand at all, but I know, and the word, the pleroma, which is how I had to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what he was talking about, so I looked it up, I Googled it, and it means everything is its opposite, all is one but opposite within itself, as I understood. Anyway, so this is when Vincent was in Denmark, you know, so he was writing that book, and he wasn't sure if the title should be the Pleroma, and I said, it's a real word, I looked it up, and he was like amazed. He said, where'd you find it? I said, on the Google. So he had to write down the Google. And I don't know if
that's great.
It was like, he was real happy to know that what he sensed and knew, it was out there the internet stuff.
That's
too.
Great.
I'd like to suggest that if we do meet again, that we start with that book.
Yeah.
The Pleroma.
Yeah.
No,
I can't find it. It's a lovely
There's
book.
A copy at the Writer's Center. Didn't some like French woman publish it or some weird publication?
She's in India.
India, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was Terry Kennedy did that.
Yeah, he worked on it with.
Have you heard of her?
I have. All right, I have a poem here that just, while everyone's talking, I thought about this. And this is one of Olson's poems that he wrote to Vince. It's called Farini One or Farini I. A study in ideal form. So, and there's a little story I'll tell. Man, this is a long fucking poem. Oh my God. This whole thing.
I'll read it.
Read some of it. But
read the
part. Is this the whole thing?
Is it from the Maximus?
He did go on. That Charles, he went on.
Is it from the Maximus poem?
No, this is not a Maximus poem.
What's it in?
It's in Complete Poems. Yeah.
If you want to know about the Gnostic word, I read Elaine Pagel's Gnostic Gospels, and it's one of the books that helped me go from being a Jew to having a Christ consciousness and developing everything.
Yeah.
And reading and studying Course in Miracles got me away from churches altogether. And I just read a book by her because she has, it's called Why Religion, because years later, even though the death of her son and a year later her husband happened, she came out with these books plus other ones, but that would be really interesting because all it is when Constantine put the New Testament together, he took out what didn't help him make
the people be ruled by him. He took out those gospels that were dangerous. That was St. Thomas. That was Judas, because Judas was in league with Jesus. Jesus said he had to do what he had to do because you have to do it. It's prophesied. And there's another Gnostic gospel.
I guarantee that
so
Vincent read
it's really
people.
Easy.
I mean, if we could go into the Cape Ann Museum, he had those books.
She's fantastic. And there's four more since that time. And this book is even good because she's questioning how could she have all this private, personal turmoil and still believe. And yet she came from a household. Her father was a scientist. Her husband was a scientist. It's really easy if you want to read. It's very easy to read.
To check.
She's
out.
Fantastic.
Let Henry.
Yeah, I know.
Henry's turn.
I know.
Okay, so I'm interpreting this as Farini I, not Farini I. A study in ideal form. Into the pool at 5 a.m. to freshen the new year child. Dewsnap Farini was his name. Over the nearest hill, the day in roses arises, and at night Venus. In white, telltale of evening, the women's song accompanied by a bell. French women's voice as women on the hillside in Greece rent Pentheus, and a bell counts two prime numbers out of which arose the world. The world is compressed of two prime numbers, Alpha and Epsilon. Formed into two, the organ of the eye, Scoptophilia, will make the new one blush. While at the window in the dawn, a woman in all the beauty of her naked body looks out and does not know the man behind her in the bed, regards her in a burst of joy. Welcome, the morning of the world. The unceasing gentle one has come to put his arms around you. Dawn fell, and in the next instant, already pregnant with the boy, espied another was to the liking of her eye and took him down upon her as the crow set to watch her in her loveliness flew up helpless in the night to warn his master, who already knew and said, "Why did you not, white crow, tear out the lover's eyes," and turned him black and flew him and flew himself to kill the mother of his child, and quite forgot until she lay before him cold that she was she whom he had found so much, and in her grave cut out his unborn son. The eye shall hold us to the course. The eye which holds us in the mind. Apollo's son by dawn, he who wouldn't marry many women but got them all by child. A kiss beneath the oak tree, the cherry lips rub her belly, she like you to kiss her rosy tits, then ground her body into a selfish dance in the middle of the room. In the night, or on his Boeotian mares tear Glaucus into pieces, and both men and women shriek aloud, hysterical, or he implored loudly, so that the house was full of his voice, as the air was with his hands. His hands were the healing plants of his body, the actions of his days, the preventative of his troubles, the carvings of his hours and minutes, all which was not expelled, all which was formally kept, that which did count as Epsilon in the creating of the world, an Epsilon. Purity is an intensifier, not a state. The eyes see instantly, not a delay. Alpha and Epsilon, the sound is immediately on the air. Alpha and Epsilon, nothing need be spit out as though it were a seed passed in the urine, piercing the ass or the mouth. The ideal creates the fluent organ, or it is not worth the thought. And the child suffers as a man, he can say, "Ay," if in his time he chooses, or because he finds out. His friend said that he was not walking on the opposite side of the street, but he didn't stop him or ask him if he wanted a lift because he noticed that he was walking, talking to himself with his hands. If he should find out what his hands are. Okay, and Gabe, you can take on number two. That's a lot of talking for me.
Yeah, and the eye is a, there's no delay in the eye.
Oh, yeah. Like
all right, let's see. Two, an organization turned toward two worlds at once requires a cognitive means which supplies both motive and direction, originary and essence. Wash yourself in the pool to begin the morning so that you may know what it is that you are doing. In the latter part of the day, Dewey Dewsnap Farini was born of a pretty mother at 5:30 of a frosty morning, and he was lucky, for it was after the turn of the dirty year, the dirty turn of the year, when those who are born, when the sun has faltered and not gone down and has not come back, who are held in the year like a crack in a vase, the crack of a vice. Time is in Saturnalia, all holy, and anything else which protects, throw in for the birds who can't get food against the unholy things which are abroad in this desperate season. Dewsnap Farini was born in a pretty picture on a hospital bed. Danger, the snapshot, danger, the year. Blue-gray the eyes, blue-gray the hair. The lover who knew her best remembered 50 years later what it was like. Something terrifying, he said, about her embrace. Elemental, archaic, she was completely immoral, and yet more pious, a vampire and a child. And Nietzsche, when he met her, I am greedy of her kind of souls. In the near future, I am going to rape one. I shall never be faithful to men. And her husband, who knew the only way to get her, stabbed himself, and for 43 years of marriage never once knew her as his wife. Virgin of bad magazines, Sasher Masco writes you up, Dewsnap Farini, in your care. 3. Heinz Orpheus comes floating down the good pathway, wants heaven without hell. Good Heinz Orpheus plays on his flute or does not believe, or makes music of the squeak of her hair. Oh, where is the good mother who will be the bosky girl? He went into the sea to get the grass. He swam down the sun-drenched waters at beachside, Glaucus did, in the Bermuda fisherman who speaks an excellent English and as interesting in his pitch and tone as a native of San Fernando, has a good ear, fishes up Glaucus, found the grass eater in his net. Freud, who did not know the Germans were officialdom, and did not therefore properly interpret dream. Co-kings, Heinz, Orpheus, Dewsnap Farini. Dewsnap means impartial beauty. We rule beyond the mare's hooves. All right, this is the end. 4. If I have used the serpent's herb, I have done it as polydios, to give life. And have done it as polydios likewise, because there is good reason why we shouldn't know. Spit into my mouth. For the day which the heifer cow that changes her color 3 times from white to red and red to black, and whoever can say, as polydios did, what the heifer cow like is like, can find Glaucus, the child raiser said, and restore him even if he's dead. Turn the eye steam outside. Don't look harmful once more. Make only one announcement. I am half a dog rose. That's the end.
So who do you think Dusnap Farini is?
What was the question you asked?
Who do you think Dusnap? He talks about Dusnap.
D-E-W-S-N-A-P.
Dusnap Farini. And I can tell you who it is because I found out in a very, very strange and and serendipitous way. I was helping my buddy Kenny Reaff when he bought his house pull up the linoleum on his floor because they were changing the, you know, they wanted of course to sand down the floors in the kitchen, right? Get rid of this 50s linoleum. So I was pulling it up and there was a Gloucester Daily Times under it. And it was an old Gloucester Daily Times. And it was like it was January 1st. I don't know if it was 1963 or 2 or whatever, but it was around that period. And the Gloucester Daily Times always loves to talk about the first baby born in the new year. Mm. And that baby was Dusnap.
Oh. No.
Dusnap. Yeah.
That's what the parents named him? Well, that's what
God.
He named him.
Isn't that great? So obviously Olson was reading the newspaper and thinking about Vincent and like digging like the fact, do snap. And it went into that poem that he wrote.
Someone named their kid Do Snap?
No, the last name was Do Snap.
Okay.
Oh, it's the last name.
Yeah, like Nicole Do Snap.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's got to be some goose snaps in Gloucester, I guess. D-E-W-S-N-A-P.
It relates to Jewel Ace.
It's a very belittling kind of name.
Goose snap?
It seems to be. It's like the
dew
vanishes when the sun rises. It's like so temporary.
About that. I was just thinking about the dew snapping when it was like, you know, like there was
a
sound.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Very odd.
So and then of course it was Dusnap Farini and it was Heinz Orpheus.
Heinz was his mother's
name. And his mother's name was Heinz.
Well, Olson's mother.
Olson's mother. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Does anybody know anything about octopuses? You know they have like a brain.
No, I don't know anything about them. Tell
well,
us.
Well, you were talking about
me.
Doing things. So
what?
Like I was thinking about this thing because I heard the octopus has a brain for every foot.
Wow.
I think, or every tenth.
Wow, that's cool.
Very
and
sensitive.
So how do they have that one head? You figure it out. It's either the eyes and the brains, or it's like a lot of brains. And you can do a lot of different things and still be one.
Well, I know another cool thing about the octopus is that they are able to visually communicate. Their body language is the main communication. They change color. And that's why they actually have that that ink, because like you know when you're hanging out with somebody and like you can't really tell but they like hate you or something. Well, like octopus can't do that because they just like turn red.
I'd like to bring it back to the poem before we go on to the octopus, because I just think that poem was pretty intense of what other people thought about it, you know, because there was like this, like I don't know where, you know, it was kind of like a love song for Vincent in one respect, that Olson called him, you know, like it was Dusnap Farini and Heinz Orpheus, the co-kings. So he was giving Vincent his like due as a poet. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that was like at the end of Olson's life. So
do you know when it was written?
I don't.
Well, after 1962,
yeah.
When he read the
right.
Daily
that's
Times
right.
or whatever.
Right, but I think that's the only. I mean, I think Butterick put that book together, so there's probably something in there when that was written. It's
well, he seemed like he was highlighting the inner eye, and that isn't he critical of that aspect and. In the letter 5, is it, you know, telling him to go have experience or something? I'm trying to remember. What is he telling him?
Well, we spoke about that last week, and I thought he was telling Vincent to play it really close with the people in Gloucester, right, and don't try to caricature the people in Gloucester, right, and don't try to like pick up some nautical term, but get down to how serious it is to be alive in the gravity of the individual's life, right, in Gloucester.
Yeah, I also think in that poem there's an apology to Vincent about his, mm-hmm, like Olson's heavy-handedness.
Mm. An apology.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And there's a few lines in there that, right, that make me think that. Mm.
But recognizing that aspect of Vincent about the inner eye, because yeah, there was a line there that I thought.
Oh, yeah, the eye has no delay. Right. It's immediate.
Is that E-Y-E or I? Because I didn't read the poem, so I'm trying to figure it's out.
Well, I don't know if it's a capital I or it's a Roman numeral one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's Verini 1. I've heard it referred to as
the inner I should probably be a capital I. I
think. Yeah.
Yeah. But he has that dot inside his signature.
Right? Mm.
Yeah. Dorothy, you never come across that?
No,
that
I want the title. What is the title? Does it have a title?
Yeah, Verini I or Verini 1.
There was no Verini 2, though.
No, there wasn't.
To make it clear. Maybe if it was Verini, maybe he was just totally merging with him.
Hmm. Yeah?
I had no clue what was going on in the whole poem.
I have to read it.
But yeah. I can tell you that if you guys want to come back here, we could spend one night just going into that poem and going through the... that book right there, that was Vincent's.
No, this is an Anna Maximus poem, so it wouldn't be in there.
Oh, okay.
What did he say?
This is not a Maximus poem, so...
So it would only be in his collected work?
Explication of everything are only for the Maximus poems.
Mm-hmm. What about Creeley?
This is his collected poems.
Do you think Creeley might have included it in his Olson's collected poems?
In the selected poems, maybe.
Well, there's notes in the back of the book there's notes in the back of the complete poems, so maybe that would help.
Yeah.
You know, I just read that new director of the Cape Ann Museum, they picked this guy. Does anybody know this guy, Oliver, his last name, Barksley? He was actually the head of the Ani and Joseph Albers Foundation.
Oh, really?
More Olson people
I
saw that today.
Huh. What, the guy who's the new, who's a...
I thought it was Courtney coming up from being something else. Though they had different interviews. They've been waiting to replace, she was retiring.
Right.
Rhoda Ronda.
So the guy from the Albers Foundation got the gig?
He was at the Museum of Fine Arts, and he did something really important as a curator. He lives in Wenham, so he's going to stay there with his family and commute. But he was one of the people that interviewed, and they picked him. But it said Ami and Joseph Albers. I went, oh my God, here we go, another Olson connect.
Yeah, wow. Well, that'll bring, if he works over there, that'll bring a huge...
So what about the future?
I would say it's up to us. If you guys are interested, if you guys want to, I would be... glad to. We could do another book. I think we could do that Pleroma book or Dorothy, whatever you think. I mean, it's really, I enjoy reading out loud and reading in a group because it's just it's enriching. I get more out of it when I hear, like, when Willie said something tonight that was like, you couldn't even look that up. You know, Willie would have to be here. Or the other night when Jim Dunn was here and he said, hey, Sacco and Vanzetti were executed at Bunker Hill. Mm. And for some reason, like, the whole time that I go into Boston for, like, 2 years, I've always looked at that Bunker Hill Community College with a weird feeling. Mm. But that just comes out, I feel like, when we meet and when we talk. So it's up to you guys if you want to do more Vincent, I'm up for it.
Yeah, because the ability to focus, right, to reread, you know, the poems together is so great to hear. I would like to help make sure that people can read, can get some of the books, so that we can, you know, like if we do the selected poems again, everybody could have a copy of it, or what was it that we wanted to make copies of? There was something.
No Smoke, I think, to put it back in print or something.
Yeah.
No, that's.
Did you get that book? Because there was No Smoke.
The
right.
Butterick's book.
It's cheap, huh?
Selected poems,
but
out of print. Mm-hmm.
If we could copy some poems for people so we could all look at them together.
Well,
does anybody remember Vincent's birthday?
Yeah.
June
24th.
Okay, so why don't we just, let's do something, let's celebrate in some way. We could do an outdoor reading of Vincent. I would love that.
A solstice reading.
Mm. Yeah.
I would be so down to do that. And
right. You got to do it in the street like you said you're going to do
it. I already read Vincent in the street.
You do?
I was, yeah, last Thursday night I was reading before class. I was reading in preparation for last week's class. I was reading No Fish. And this man came up to me and said, "What's that?" I'm in Cafe Sicilia drinking a cappuccino. And he says, "What's that you got there?" And so I hand him Vincent's book. And he goes, "Oh, poetry? I don't like poetry. It's too abstract." And I said, "Well, sit down." And he sits down, and I read him Forge Plant. Mm. And he was incredibly moved by it.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, "You know, abstract? Let's read Forge Plant, because that's not abstract." Mm. And it went over really well.
That's a great idea.
This poem was
1963,
Liz.
Anniversary of Olson.
Oh,
when
did you just
yeah.
say?
Was it the 100th anniversary of Olson? The centenary, the people did read Olson's poetry out loud downtown.
Yeah, we had a walking tour, and we went to all sorts of all around town. That was 2010.
2010, because he died. So it's the anniversary of his death.
Yeah.
Yeah. He died.
Yeah.
June 24th. You can use that outdoor parking lot and that little boardwalk that's in front of it and do it outside.
Yeah.
And speakers
yeah.
and you could.
There's all kinds of places.
So when I went back into Cafe Sicilia this week, the guy was there, but he was there with his gang.
Oh, that's gang. Awesome.
And he said, in Italian, that this man's a poet. Mm-hmm. And everybody shook my hand.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really cool.
Huh.
But, you know, that's one thing, like Amiri Baraka said, you know, if you think your poems are good, you should be able to read them to anyone who's willing to listen. Mm-hmm. And so I had no fear about this guy, even though he was, like, already prejudiced against poetry. I had no fear because I said, this is great, man.
So what did you read him?
I read him Forge Plant.
Oh, you didn't read him one of your things.
I read my poems after I read Vincent's. But the point was, I knew that I could rely on Vincent to not be abstract, to be flesh, I mean, like, in the flesh.
Insects, when
and,
I was,
yeah.
and I in shoes.
And he was, and now I'm the, I mean, that and like, the girls at Cafe Sicilia, I mean, like, they were stoked, because I read in the cafe.
Wow.
And, you know, like, I think Cafe Sicilia is already poetic, but...
You're going to meet somebody there. He goes in, Sean? Have you met Sean?
Maybe.
We go to a poetry on Thursday nights in Beverly, and, like, he does it for the other guy whose house it's in. But he's in Florida. His father passed away. But he goes in there, and it's going
to
happen.
All right, well, it's getting close to the end, and I want to read one more poem.
All right,
and I read it at the first class, but it's just one of my favorite Vincent poems. And one day I'll probably memorize it. It's going to be The Garden of the Apocalypse again.
This is from the selected.
This is in Selected Poems, and I'm so happy it's in here.
That's the name?
Yeah, let me get it. Hold on. And if anybody sees it before me, let me know. The Garden of the Apocalypse is on 42. And we got the gold that Wilk was talking about on the following page. So why don't we just do? I'm gonna read this, and then maybe somebody will read the gold. The Garden of the Apocalypse. The black man has no premium on color and enslavement. Neither has the yellow man, nor the white, nor the brown-skinned. Each person carries a civil war within him, who, wedding the contraries in himself, already is on the way, pioneering the new civilization. Flags are obsolete, and so are countries and creeds. We are witnesses and participants ending the interregnum. Tomorrow, no, today, Earth is the begetter of the universe, and love the only kingdom which is not by fiat. A man is in it, outside it, or approaching the gates.
Mm-hmm. Let me read the other one.
Yeah, Willie.
The suddenness flowers have startles the air with their fire and ether. As we do with what is ours, because we are the gardeners of each other. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.